We present the News Quiz with your host, Simon Evans.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a post spotted on a local Facebook group in Aberdeen and read by Kathy Clugston.
I would like to thank the lovely couple who were driving through Newmacher tonight and spotted our pet rabbit Sparkles on the main road. My daughter was distraught, but I'm happy to say she's now back in her hutch.
And our thanks to Gregor Duncan for sending in that story of Sparkles and Hutch. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Phil Jupitus and comedian and political commentator, Aisha Hazarika. And opposite them on my left, stand-up comedian Phil Wang and Rory Bremner. Phil, who's no longer Putin up with it?
Yeah, this is about Novichok, which is not an exciting new coffee bar in Shoreditch. But I believe that by the end of this show, it may very well be. They've identified the two blokes that did the poisoning in Salisbury.
The perpetrators.
They've found their two agents. And they have, I mean, a startling array of evidence and the most explicit timeline of where they were. And it seems photographs of them about every 5 yards. So if you cut up your papers from the other day with the photos of them, you can make a very accurate flick book of them walking through... walking through the streets of Salisbury. And the names of these guys were my favourite bit of this whole thing. Their names were Russian Borishov and Alexander Petrov, which they could not be more apparent. Seriously, does that mean that now we have to give our spies very obvious spy names? The MI5 now, there's going to be Henrietta Smythe Mysterious. Percy Pierce Sinister, of course, you know, over at the CIA, they're a bit more basic than that, so it would be Bob Spy. So Mrs. May announced to a gasping parliament that they'd found these guys and then they knew where they were. They can't extradite them because Russia's probably the shruggiest nation on the world that we have to deal with. You accuse them of anything and they go, meh, meh. There's a lot of meh, that's pretty much it. Like Theresa May said quite seriously, these guys who are, you know, responsible for a death and the attempted murder of three others, she pointed out that these guys have been found. And the Russians said, we don't know who they are. Never heard of them. Eh? Don't know who they are. And now we post photo of you dancing funny in Africa. This how clever you are for spies. Look how you dance.
I was a bit worried. She has actually said that we will have our revenge on Russia, which is that strong. That's kind of Maximilian talk, isn't it?
If there's anything we've learnt from this whole thing, it's that they bear a grudge, the Russians.
Yeah. I'm all for sabre-rattling in the right circumstances, but not necessarily with countries who are invariably represented in cartoon form as an implacable and ravenous carnivore. Is there not some country that's more like a beaver-based country or something?
It turned into something of a Russian roast in Parliament the other day, because Ben Wallace, who's a security minister, he actually said their tradecraft was woeful. Been reading a bit of John le Carré lately, have we been?
There is a certain amount of style to it. I don't know if you've seen this, Aisha. The Novichok, in this case, was put in a counterfeit Nina Ricci Premier Jour perfume bottle, which that follows, of course, the Ricin umbrella, which was used, a polonium teapot. This sort of suggests that Russian spies have found a novel way of re-gifting terrible Christmas presents. Taking revenge on double agents.
It's like a really bad episode of the Antiques Roadshow. They had all this footage of these hitmen kind of travelling around. And I think the most shocking thing, and the thing that should have given it away, was that the hitmen relied on a Sunday rail service in Waterloo. No sane British person would ever do that, right?
They stayed in a two-star hotel. Did you see this? I can't imagine. I don't know what gave them away, whether it was evidence or whether it was the TripAdvisor review, which they left afterwards. Bed's not very firm. Bathroom wholly inadequate for the handling of fatally toxic substances. would have liked to see more bacon with the breakfast. But they, you know, it reflects badly on Salisbury, doesn't it, that they didn't stay overnight. They went there. Phil, have you registered any curious aspects of this story?
Well, the Nina Ritchie little bottle is nice. It's nice to see that even Russian spies have to abide by the 100 milliliter limit when they fly with liquids. I'm just amazed they were able not to contaminate the entire plane. Can you imagine? Because, like, a drop of that stuff will kill you. I guess that was the idea.
The poison, right? The poison.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's just be clear now, in case the Nina Ritchie people are listening.
It's going to make people think twice, because you visit hotel rooms, especially two-star ones, you do try and offset the cost by taking the toiletries home with you, don't you?
Did you say it was called Premier Jour?
Premier Jour by
Nina Ritchie. Should be Dernier Jour, shouldn't it? Consistent. I mean, but the whole thing, it is like a farce, isn't it? They'll turn it into a musical one day. It'll be, if it's your thing to authorise the poisoning of former spies to get your kicks, that's Putin on the Brits. But I think Theresa's her capacity for revenge on the international stage has been weakened now. She can't send Boris on a visit. Because I think that was the worst punishment of all, was... No, Mr. Putin. Oh, he is a pariah with a considerable Novichok chip on his shoulder.
Because the foreign secretary is now Jeremy Hunt, who is blaming the attack on junior doctors.
This is the news that the British government has identified two suspects in the Salisbury nerve agent attack. The men, using the names Alexander Petrov and Ruslan Bosharov, are thought to be officers from Russia's military intelligence service. According to the Prime Minister, Theresa May has vowed to deploy the full range of tools across our national security apparatus. So that's both the mirror sunglasses and the invisible ink. The government called a meeting of the UN Security Council on Thursday, detailing the timeline of how the suspects disposed of the deadly nerve agent. So, like most council meetings, it turned out to be mainly complaints about how someone had put something in the wrong bin. Security Minister Ben Wallace said that Vladimir Putin bore ultimate responsibility for the attacks. That's Security Minister Ben Wallace, whose life insurance premiums have just skyrocketed. 2 points to Phil. Aisha, who isn't banking on Brexit success?
So this would be Mervyn King, the former governor of the Bank of England. And he has said that the Brexit preparations are incompetent. He said that it beggared belief that the world's sixth biggest economy should be talking about stockpiling food and medicine and envisaging a future where its citizens will be living in bunkers eating tins of Win-A-Lot chum. Everyone is losing confidence in the Chequers deal, and Parliament's just come back this week, and Dominic Raab, who is the new sort of Brexit secretary, had a very difficult time. I say he's the Secretary of State for Brexit. He's actually now the Secretary of State for tinned food. Now, Dominic Raab is quite punchy on Brexit. He's like a sort of the scrappy do of Brexit. And then he had this really unfortunate run-in with Stephen Kinnock. And Stephen Kinnock said that he had spoken to an EU negotiator who said that the Chequers deal was dead in the water. Now, Dominic Raab challenged him and said, how do I know that you've got this right? Repeat it in French, you know. Have you made a misinterpretation? And Stephen Kinnock went, yeah, the negotiator said, la proposition, c'est mort.
Mervyn has sounded the alarm on what he thinks might be a brino. Have you come across this term before, the brino?
Yeah.
Brexit in name only. This is based on the Republican in name only, the rhino, which is an American phenomenon, apparently, the Republican in name only. But I can't help feeling the brino doesn't quite do the same job, does it? Somehow suggests somebody who's sort of disabled themselves with an over-fondness for drinking seawater or something.
It does take a brain the size of Mervyn King's to... I mean, because I don't think we realised that Brexit was incompetent until... I mean, that is the kind of brilliant, insightful analysis that you'd expect from a former governor of the Bank of England. I mean, what I will say about all the vote leave people is that at least they're consistent. They've all left. I mean, the founders of Vote Leave, they quit before the referendum even happened. So they got out of it. Farage, as you know, he quit the day after. I think he stepped down as leader of UKIP. He grew a moustache and turned up at the German embassy. He was going with that, or Poland, presumably. But he... Boris and Gove and Leadsom, they all bottled out of the leadership race. And Boris has now resigned again. David Davis has resigned. Steve Baker's resigned. It means that Theresa May is the only one that's left. And she only got the job because she was the last one to sit down in the post-Brexit cabinet game of musical chairs. And even then, she sat down in Damien Green's lap and got a hell of a shock. You kind of feel sorry for her because she, you know, she keeps going to Switzerland. Dignitas keeps sending her back.
On the streets, Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham is calling for Brexit to be postponed if a no-deal scenario seems likely, which I have to say sounds a bit like peeling off a plaster very slowly and gently and then reattaching it to a slightly more delicate area of the pubic region in order to really feel the pain the second time. What do you think? Second referendum? Are you in favour of that sort of thing?
I think the deadline will just keep applying to resit our exam again and again and again. And it'll just keep going into eternity. It's never going to happen.
The idea is that all the old people die and the young people who were sort of were looking forward to studying mime at the Sorbonne come online and become more enthusiastic about it. But they ignore the middle period, which is, you know, roughly my age, at which you start to sort of feel bigotry emerging within you. And
I'm already turning right-wing. I'm 28 and I'm already going right-wing. Like, I used to think that I was a socialist. But looking back now, I realise I just didn't have any money. I have money now, I'm not sharing that, it's mine.
This is the news that former Bank of England governor and Brexiteer Mervyn King has attacked the government's approach to Brexit as incompetent. If you ask me, Brexit is all going according to plan. Yes, the next 30 or 40 years may be difficult, but gradually, as the lack of insulin, antibiotics and other medical staples takes effect, the herd will be thinned out and the surviving line should be reinvigorated, allowing Britain to be reborn as a nation of robust, medication-free, bulging, shiny-bicepped ultra-peoples. In other Brexit news this week, giant animated novelty pyjama case Boris Johnson described the UK as paying £40 billion worth of taxpayers' money for two-thirds of diddly squat. Although given the degree to which the pound has fallen against the diddly squat in recent months, that's not as bad a deal as it sounds. 2 points to Aisha. Phil, who's just done it?
This will be the protests in America against the sporting goods brand Nike. Colin Kaepernick, who became famous, he started the kneeling campaign to protest police brutality in America against black people. He has appeared in Nike's most recent advert. That's what ad is short for. And the message of the Nike ad is the 30th anniversary of the Just Do It slogan, and so to front this advert, they have Colin Kaepernick, who just did it for his values. He just did it. He took a knee and was not able to play professional football because of that decision. But the message is he just did it. Ironically, because of that decision, he now doesn't need Nike products anymore. But I guess that's an irony they've glazed over. And so in response to this, a tweet emerged of a country musician in America, a Trump-supporting country musician.
That's tautology, really.
Yeah, I mean, who'd have thought a country musician would hearken for a bygone era that never existed? And he tweeted a photo of his sound engineer who had torn off the Nike ticks on his Nike socks, unaware, apparently, that he'd already bought them. And was now just ruining his own property. But just do it, I guess. And so this ignited a trend among conservative Trump supporters to do the same, sometimes literally, and they'd, you know, set their Nike shoes on fire and things like that. And in response, you know, people on the left have been making fun of them, and so the wheel of life turns.
It has been a hugely successful slogan for Nike over the last 30 years, reversing their failing fortunes after their previous slogans, just buy them, look some shoes, none of which were very successful.
There was video of one protester who was setting fire to his Nike shoes while still wearing them. But then if you're a racist, what are you supposed to burn? Because you haven't got any books, have you?
I was thinking, you know those red hats, those Make America Great hats? I was thinking, I wish, I really hoped I could find some connection with Nike with those hats so that people would set their own heads on fire. And I thought, imagine Donald Trump setting fire to his own head. That big swoosh with his hair, it just literally would be the Nike sign, wouldn't it?
Phil, what do you think? Are you?
No, it's the state of the people burning their shoes, the size of them. I mean, come on, trainers, really?
Also in the States this week, did anyone see the anonymous op-ed in the New York Times?
I read the article. I think it's very bad. Very, very, very bad. He said, we're going to find this guy, whoever he or she is. What I love is everything. He keeps talking about witch hunts, doesn't he? He's like, they're going on a witch hunt. They're going to find a big one. I'm not scared.
This is the story of protests in America following Nike's signing of controversial quarterback Colin Kaepernick, who was the first American footballer to kneel during the national anthem in protest at racial injustice in America. One enraged patriot claimed that Nike was forcing him to choose between his favourite shoes and his country, a dilemma I have every single time I slip on my yellow wooden gardening clogs. By writing Brexit means Brexit over a gift from Belgium, I can still enjoy stamping on the writhing slugs with a clear conscience. At my age, you should only wear trainers for two reasons: humiliating your teenage daughter at the school gates and pretending to go for a jog when you've had enough of your family. One Christmas, it was 4 days before they discovered what pub I was in. Also this week, an op-ed was published in the New York Times which criticised Donald Trump's amorality, claiming to be from an anonymous source. Trump is surrounded by people who try to prevent him doing or saying anything too controversial, a bit like the way everyone surrounds grandma when your neighbour Kasim pops round. 2 points to Phil. Rory, who's finished labouring over a definition?
Your reaction to this will depend on whether you're a member of a religion that's paranoid, seen as sinister and suspicious and intolerant of any criticism, or whether you're not a Corbynite. So this is about Jeremy Corbyn, who's still refusing to adopt the internationally accepted definition of leader. It's gone on and on, hasn't it, this anti-Semitism row, which is really annoying for Jeremy Corbyn. What was interesting, Ken Livingston came out and supported him. I wouldn't say
that Jeremy Corbyn's anti-Semitic any more than I am.
But it's, I mean, it's... And Pete Wilsman, this is the guy, the activist, you know, the one who came out, and he was recorded ranting there was no anti-Semitism in the party, and this is all put up by Jewish Trump fanatics. And he said, he's standing by Corbyn. He gave a statement. He said, I'm standing by Jerry. I mean, nobody calls him Jerry, do they?
No, it's an unfortunate word to use in the context of anti-Semitism.
Nobody calls him Jerry. I mean, not the many, maybe the few. But also, actually, I quite like the idea, because if Tom Watson is the deputy leader of the Labour Party, that does mean the party are led by Tom and Jerry. So he's got a point.
I think this ongoing anti-Semitism problem is just the Labour Party's way of combating accusations that it is a communist party by showing that it can expand and adopt Nazi policies too. In many ways, it is the most inclusive party politically.
This has been such a terrible summer for the Labour Party with all this anti-Semitism stuff. And I was at a big conference last week with the Jewish Labour Movement, and part of the reason why the anti-Semitism thing has become so big, it's a proxy to a bigger civil war happening in the Labour Party, and it's either are you with the Corbynites or are you against them? Are you a Corbynite, or if you're not a Corbynite, you're seen as a Blairite? And Gordon Brown spoke at the conference on Sunday, and he spoke very movingly and very powerfully, and there sort of wasn't a dry eye in the house afterwards. And then I went on Twitter and people were like, what a Blairite. I mean, Gordon Brown is many things, but he is the man that hounded Tony Blair out of his job.
Phil, how do you feel about anti-Semitism? For or against?
I'm not, I'm not touching this with a barge pole, mate. I'm letting you have it.
No interest at all?
No.
No.
No, there's not enough mess in the world that this is there as well. There's a constant background noise. It's absolutely shrill at the moment, isn't it? I'm 56. Do you not get that point where you just
56
wanna...
years of age?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think I meant 56 stone, didn't you? I've no idea why this one has particularly gained the traction it has, and it's been going on for how long now?
2,500 years, I believe, although yes. Some say...
That's it.
I mean, that's coming from the Maccabees. Yeah. Some people go further forward. This is the news. The Labour have finally adopted the full International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism. The row has kept Labour occupied for months and has allowed the Tory party a rare glimpse of the moral high ground on race relations, high ground on which Boris Johnson immediately erected a throw-a-hoop-around-a-burqa, win-a-goldfish stall. To have been privy to the voice in Jez's head at the press conference. Don't say we finally have a solution. Don't say we finally have a solution. The group Labour Against Anti-Semitism suggested this week that the party still risked giving racists a get-out-of-jail-free card, a bizarre reference to an outmoded board game that actively encourages the fantasy that you too could one day own property in central London. If Labour were to play Monopoly, it would have to be anti-clockwise, handing over 200 quid to the state every time you pass go before beginning the slow, resentful trudge past Mayfair and Park Lane back to the old Kent Road. 2 points to Rory. And at the end of round one, the scores are Phil and Aisha have 4 points, but so too do Phil and Rory. We start round two with a cutting from the Times in the corrections and clarifications section.
Because of a production error, a photograph of Lord Prescott was incorrectly captioned as Clint Eastwood. We apologise to both.
Thanks to everyone who sent us that. I can pretty well imagine which movie they were thinking of in particular. Clyde was his name, wasn't it, I think? Anyway. Phil. Have a listen to this. Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you. No pills gonna cure my ill. I got a bad case of loving you. Phil, who has been prescribed a dose of plain English?
I always like coming on the news quiz and then you play the hot tunes. I always imagine that somewhere like Wiltshire. Margaret, there's popular music on the wireless. Fetch my gun.
But Albert, I have a bad case of loving you.
It's the doctors have been given a leaflet, which I'm sure they're glad of, telling them that they should write more clearly, which why this wasn't done hundreds of years ago, I don't know. I don't know if anyone's ever seen a prescription lately, but I'm surprised that I wasn't killed in the early 1960s. When doctors, hospitals, consultants write to the GPs, they've been asked to copy in the patients as well, so the patients feel a bit more involved in the healing process. And so doctors have been asked to write clearly and so not use Latin.
Do you think that's good, though? Do you think that it makes sense for doctors to write in plain English, or do you think that it would make more sense for Latin to be reintroduced into the national curriculum,
well,
for instance?
There was a slight element of, why don't we educate people better so they understand what doctors are saying? And it's not particularly obscure medical jargon, but they do want them to write a little bit, you were lovely. Thank you for coming to see me. The lumps on your knees are a bad thing. Big lumps, they're your knees.
Aisha, have you had any troubling diagnoses recently that
I don't want to talk about it. I just think the NHS is so overstretched. I'm surprised they can actually afford pens and ink. I thought due to austerity they'd be using quills and sort of bodily fluids to dip into to write things. This is all part of the dumbing down of society, and I think it's only a matter of time before doctors actually stop writing letters and communicate via emojis. So let's say you're going to get some very, very bad news. You would just get a text with a sad face on it.
Or the broken heart one. That would be a bit more literal than usual. Or the aubergine, which I believe is supposed to be... That's a bit of a swelling, isn't it? Is that right?
That sounds a bit me too. It's a bit,
what do you think?
Oh, wow. We were so optimistic about his guest hosting.
It's deteriorated into outright harassment. Let's see if we can get it back on track. Phil?
Yeah, I think anything that makes the process more transparent, the better. You know, recently, over the last couple of years, most of my medical engagements have been at STI clinics. Not that I'm particularly sexually active, but like, you know, dress for the job you want kind of thing. But what I was found the most uncomfortable about the doctors, especially if you come from a GP to a consultant or something and they have to pass a note from one to the other, no one likes being spoken about in the third person. That's infantilizing.
Well,
you
Simon
know.
Evans does, I can tell you.
My mother is a doctor. And this problem, you know, the doctor's writing bleeds into the house as well. I mean, you know, my birthday cards were an absolute... Phil is 8 years old today. I recommend he enjoys his cake. I prescribe rollerblades.
Rory.
So I suppose the idea that instead of atrial fibrillation, they'll write irregular pulse. Instead of pancreatic carcinoma, it'll be jippy tummy. For chronic irritation, they'll just put the patient. And there's the abbreviations as well. Another one, which is they've been told to avoid OD, which apparently means once daily. Did you know that? Because if I was given some pills and told OD... One a day, I'd have the lot immediately.
That would be quite a temptation, wouldn't it? This is the news that hospital doctors are being told to write letters directly to patients in plain English in a move the profession's leaders hope will sweep away the use of baffling medical language like, sorry, Simon, black cherry pipe tobacco isn't one of your five a day. Now please put some trousers on. Doctor code is quite old-fashioned, with a lot of Latin in it. It includes sayings such as bis, ter and quid in die, which means two, three or four times a day, which is fine if your diagnosis is a Roman illness like plague, typhoid or an acute case of Vesuvius to the face. 2 points to Phil. Aisha, what isn't meeting consumer standards?
Meat. So they've tested various meat products and they've found that there's sort of other unspecified animal DNA in the product. And now everybody is getting very worried about meat purity. Everybody gets really worried about meat purity until you're 10 sheets to the wind and you decide you need a doner kebab. The other thing is, I was thinking, like, what is this unspecified meat product? And I was thinking, like, what's been happening in terms of public policy? What have we been doing in this country? We've been killing a lot of badgers. I think we have all been eating badger burgers for a very, very long time now. And I was thinking that it would be a good new marketing slogan for the meat industry. At least it's meat, we think.
I've got a mate of mine, Tony. There was a band called Terrorvision who did tequila, right? He's a lovely bloke, but he quit the rock business. He runs a very nice coffee shop now in Otley. And he was my favourite ever rocker to drink with, because it's not like you'd get this from any other rock and roll star. I remember being out late one night in Leeds having a beer with him. And at one point, the conclusion of one of our conversations was him drunkenly leering at me, "You can't eat badgers because they're a kind of bear."
Well, that's something to bear in mind, certainly. Rory, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, unspecified meat. It sounds like Boris Johnson's Tinder profile, doesn't it?
Swipe left.
But I quite like the badger thing. I think that because as long as they had labels, so it was all in black and white.
Phil, do you have any preference for your meat products?
Preference? Mm. Meat products? In my mouth. Yeah. I don't care. Unspecified extra DNA sounds like a good deal to me. Because you normally have to pay for mixed meat. And it's a double standard, you know. It's always us meat eaters who get berated for not labelling things properly. I ordered a rocket salad once. Not a single rocket in it. It was just leaves. I thought I'd have a ball of little rockets flying about. Well, what a sight that would have been. No, bitter leaves. So... Sorry, I didn't have much on this.
I think you nailed it, Phil. This is the news this week of a report that found in tests on meat a fifth of samples revealed an unspecified animal's DNA. So now we know it. All meat is basically mince, as I inform my dinner guests when I serve them my speciality, Simon's big plate of mince. You don't need a knife and fork or indeed hands. Face first, like a ravening dog. Then it's crumble time. Kebabs are the perfect illustration of the fact that Providence anxiety is in inverse correlation to alcohol consumption. 1 pint. Is it lamb? 3 pints. Is it mammal? 5 pints. Are they open? And this is why you should only eat meat you've shot and killed yourself, ideally on your own property. I'm sorry, but I'd warn them about those balls coming over. 2 points to Aisha. Phil, who's leading the polls for worst head teacher?
Oh, this is a story about a pole dancer who welcomed back children in China. So, surprise, surprise, the story has come to Wang. Just because I used to be a stripper.
I must admit, I would have thought you would have changed your stage name when you moved into comedy.
Not transferable fans. Yeah, so a head teacher at a kindergarten in China thought it would be a good idea for the first day of school to have the kids greeted by a pole dancing performance. Well, that's definitely more of a year nine thing. So it's a maddest thing. It's a story in China about pole dancing, or as known in Poland, Chinese dancing. But yeah, that's what's happened, man. Pole dancing at a kindergarten in China. The head teacher has been fired, fortunately. Mm. Or that's what the government says.
Rory, what do you think? Is this appropriate action?
I don't know. I went to an all-boys school, so for me it would have been our PT instructor, Mr. McIntosh, dangling upside down in his kilt. which isn't really... that image is a cake you can't unbake, really. But you know what... just what were they thinking of? It gives a whole new meaning to the phrase soft play area, doesn't it? That's the thing.
What I loved is the school kind of styled it out. They didn't apologise. They just completely doubled down on the fact that this was brilliant for kids to learn. I can't understand it. Mm.
Well, it's a demonstration of centrifugal force, I guess. It's kicking the physics off to a good start.
This is about context. Now, was this girl doing the dance? Was she in all the gear and, like, were the kids going up and putting penguins in her knickers? Not actual penguins, that would... takes in a whole different direction, doesn't it?
So, pick one up at the end.
An image I can't shake.
Well, you would sort of hope that
Eskimo lap dancing club. Oh, yeah, you like it, don't you? It's a puffin. I've got change for a puffin.
This is the story of a school in Shenzhen City in China where this week the head teacher arranged for a pole dancer to perform to welcome the children back to school. I don't know what all the fuss is about. If Mrs. Davis wasn't firing Christmas baubles from her nether regions in whole school assembly, it just wasn't Michaelmas term for us. But this is clearly what a, you know what would be funny conversation during the end of year staff party looks like in practice. A school is a completely inappropriate venue for pole dancing, which should only be performed at a gentleman's club, a stag night, or occasionally a wake. I'm sorry, Auntie Maureen, but it's what Uncle Bill would have wanted. 2 points to Phil. Rory, have a listen to this.
Record breaker. If you're the tallest, the smallest, if you beat them all. If you're the fattest, the thinnest, if you always win. If you're the fastest, the slowest, if you really go, then you're a record breaker. A record maker. You're a record breaker.
a lot groovier than I remember. From it.
Roy Carter will bring the funk.
Absolutely.
They're playing Rory. Their popular music again. Fetch the gun, there's another one up the spout.
Rory, for the record, what has been launched this week?
So, this is amazing, because more and more old people are breaking records, all sorts of records. And these two, you might not have heard about, this is amazing. They made it into the Guinness Book of Records. One is an 85-year-old Californian woman, trapeze artist, called Betty Goodhart. That's a great name, isn't it? And she's the oldest woman currently performing a high wire act, beating Theresa May by about 20 years. She first took up trapeze when she was 78, and she's been up there ever since. And amazing, she does it without a net. Because Annette was 79 and... and very sadly died last
Rory,
year.
Rory, would you leave the News Quiz studio?
She's 85.
Barry Cryer is outside this building now going, no!
But, you know, so 85 and she's doing trapeze. You see, I think this is because of the increases in medical care now that old people are having to come up with ever more imaginative ways to kill themselves. And the other one is an 83-year-old Japanese DJ called Sumiko Iwamura, who's apparently the world's oldest DJ. Hang on, how old is Ken Bruce? But this is a club DJ, apparently. I don't know what she plays. Presumably it's less house and garage, more sheltered accommodation.
Rory, I told you once.
Phil, any attempts on a record?
What? Not me, son. No. Never. Although I love record breakers, I still remember that. The one that he broke when he was playing all the musical instruments, he did that on the show. And the biggest ever tap dance routine in the donut at the BBC, which is amazing. Yeah, yeah. I like that. Sorry, it's not funny, it's just true. We've got to have light and shade on this show.
After you were so mean to Rory, I'm just going to let you hang.
I just think fair play to them. I loved the DJ as well. I just thought it was amazing, and it must be nice to be scratching something other than piles at that age, to be honest.
You can go sit with him.
What's nice about having an 83-year-old DJ is that at one of her raves, the beat is not the only thing that could drop.
This, at any rate, is the news that the latest edition of the Guinness Book of World Records has come out. It's in its 63rd edition and is one of the best-selling books in the UK, not to feature wizards or monochromatic softcore bondage. Holders is Cherry Yoshitake, who managed to eat 71 beans with chopsticks in 1 minute. Though apparently, when his parents' friends ask what their son is up to these days, they proudly reply, "He's dead." And the current world record for longest nose belongs to Mehme Oziyuruk, with a nose of 8.8 centimetres. When asked if he was upset to lose the title to Mr. Oziyuruk, Pinocchio said no, and thereby immediately regained it. Betty Goodhart won the record for being the world's oldest trapeze artist. Betty, 85, regularly stares death in the face, as well as being a keen trapeze artist. 2 points to Rory.
I like that.
It's
that,
cute,
that
isn't
asks
it?
Asks a lot of the listener, and it's worth the journey.
Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Phil?
Thanks to Alaric Bond of East Sussex, who saw this advertisement for a vintage car on eBay. You are bidding on an MG Midget Tourer from 1949, which we are selling on behalf of a deceased person. We believe the body has been altered over the years.
Aisha.
This is from Sarah Corser. It's a review taken from booking.com. Quality bed and amenities, perfect location, wonderful for our one-night stand.
Phil.
This is from Tim Viney in Penrith, Cumbria. On Radio 5 Monday Night Club, in a discussion about football, Ian Wright was asked, "Are there ways round being able to play if you don't have the legs but have the experience?" To which he replied, "I kind of think that in today's football, you've got to have legs." You've got to have legs. If you look at all the top teams, they've all got legs.
And Rory.
This one's from Joe Hayward, who saw this article in the Burton Boat Company Lifestyle magazine. A brief history of the Royal Ocean Racing Club. By 1936, the club had amassed 600 members and finally secured its own clubhouse in London. By 1940, war was well underway, and on the 15th of November, the club was unfortunately destroyed with a direct hit, killing the new steward. Thankfully, however, records, trophies and the wine cellar were saved.
Take a look at the final score. Phil and Aisha, you have 10 points, but this week's winners are Phil and Rory with 11. Ladies and gentlemen. And before we leave you, here is something spotted in an article on the BBC News website and has been sent in by lots of people.
Simon Cowell has given up his phone for 10 months. If you have also given up your phone, please call us on this number to share your experience.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Phil Jupitus, Aisha Hazarika, Phil Wang and Rory Bremner. In the chair was Simon Evans and the news was read by me, Kathy Clubston. The chair script was written by Madeline Brettingham, Dan Evans and Jenny LaVille, with additional material by Will Duggan, Laura Major and Mike Shepherd. The producer was Andy Goddard and it was a BBC Studios production.